Sound Pages is a literary series featuring resident artists in the Jack Straw Writers Program.
Bugling their majestic mating calls, the cliffs ringing with the ungainly struggle to reach high F.
This program features the work of 2023 writer David K. Ray. In the first half, you'll hear his conversation with curator Priscilla Long, recorded in the Jack Straw studio.
So I want to start by asking you, what is your Jack Straw project this year?
Well, I'm a prose writer and a poetry writer, so I'm going to be doing both with more attention than I've given so far to actually publishing something in the way of a chapbook or a collection, something like that. Could be down the road. I'm not sure how many I've got in the can that would work. With a chapbook, I think you need a theme, or sometimes it helps anyway.
It helps to have at least something linking them together. So, yeah.
So that would mean writing a series of poems about the same thing, probably. So.
Or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Jack Straw is a great incubator for such things. So what is your daily writing practice?
Yeah, no fixed schedule.
Mm-hmm.
It helps to be in a group of some kind, I think, because then you have a deadline, sort of. And I'm used to living with deadlines.
Yeah.
From journalism.
Poetry deadlines are excellent.
Yeah.
You must write a poem by next Thursday.
Uh-huh. Yeah, excellent, but a little exhausting sometimes, too. I do a lot of work late at night. I think that's from working in journalism, where, swing shift hours, putting out a morning newspaper. And that was 20 years until I retired. I find it helps to read first, then write, which is advice from Marvin Bell, one of the summer Port Townsend workshops. So I'll read quite a bit if I have the time before I start in. It just gets the mind to thinking in terms of that poetry. One thing is that I really consider myself still a student of poetry, and I think I'll always be a student of poetry rather than a poet with a capital P.
Mm-hmm.
But
I think that's a great way to think about being in the poetry world, because you're never. You're never there.
There's so much out there, and there's still unexplored territory, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the most interesting experiences I've had at Port Townsend, it's nothing but literary and poetry in particular, all for a whole week.
Mm-hmm.
And readings, lectures, morning classes of a couple hours, and by the end of the week I had the experience of just writing the last assignment, probably pretty late at night, and just finding that the words were writing themselves.
Oh,
it's something mystical was going on. I think it's just a direct feed from the subconscious.
Oh, that's fabulous!
It was just riveting, and they just always seemed to be the right words. I don't know where they came from for sure, but I just thank myself, the part of my mind that's listening but never talks to me.
Yeah, that is fabulous. Yeah, that's the real core of the creative experience, mm-hmm. right there.
Yeah, I think I've been at that point maybe another time or two, but it's rare and it's to be treasured.
Yeah, doesn't it seem to require that preceding week of? I mean, it requires being immersed, whatever.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what you're going for with read first, then write.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Now, how long have you been out of newspaper work?
About 4 or 5 years.
4 or 5 years. Yeah. When you first left it, was it kind of a shock?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I mean, yeah. Have all this time all of a sudden.
Well, actually, I've done a lot of gardening and stuff like that. There's always stuff to do around the house, and you know how that is.
Yeah.
And I also edited this is probably the most rewarding editing job I ever had was working on a book about a guidebook to American Mahjong that my wife wrote, Stacy Ray. And it's called Let's Play Modern American Mahjong. And she's a retired teacher, and she would make these little flip books. Uh-huh. For her students, or you know, teach them to make them, and it took that form, and it involved a lot of editing because each page is a different size, so you can see the index at the bottom as you flip through it.
Wow!
And it's something you can use if you're learning to play Mahjong. You can flip through and keep up with the stages of the game until you know everything going on.
Wow!
I think I owe the technical writing and editing certificate program a debt of gratitude for doing that.
Mm.
She sold thousands of them.
Wow.
It's put a lot of groceries on the table.
Great. That's great. So it wasn't just a separation between this life and that life.
No, I kept busy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I still went to Port Townsend, mm-hmm. and had the poetry group at the library. And
yeah.
Some friends. We get together and critique sometimes online now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And have you read much out and about?
Yeah, a little bit. Not for a while because of the pandemic. Yeah, but... Right.
And you plan to do more reading? You're going to read for Jack Straw, so there's that.
Yeah, we'll be busy this year with
yes.
that, so that'll be fun.
But is your plan to continue reading out and about? I mean, presuming the pandemic has, you know, tamps down anyway or something.
Yeah, I'd like to do that.
Is that enjoyable?
Get together with some friends and, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, great.
Yeah, there's one in West Seattle at C&P Coffee. I don't know if they've been doing it lately, but that was always a pretty good reading.
Yeah.
Close to home, too.
Yeah. Oh, you live in White Center, which is close to...
Yeah, kind of the south end of West Seattle.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they've started. I think they have started again, like every other time or something like that. And let's see. I think the last question, what do you want your legacy to be?
Well, I just I'd like to have a few people I'm friends with and close to remember some of my work, things I've done that might help them see a little more how life is.
Now we'll hear a selection from David's live reading.
Mid-Century Docent's Tour. Here is the actual hat in this snapshot from their box Kodak. You can see she had a lost kind of happiness. And from the hat itself, you know, she was small. I think she was maybe bigger in high school. Basketball, She liked remembering that. And the woman teacher who said she should really go on to college. But the money, her father said, nah, just not enough for that. She left the farm, though, worked as a maid in the city, and got fired for I don't know why. During the war, she was a clerk at the phone company when she met my dad, a storekeeper in the Navy. I have his old peacoat here somewhere. But this is a vase from California where her new mother-in-law took her shopping and afterward called her a Swedish moron, which she never forgot overhearing. How small she was by then, but I couldn't even tell until I grew a little older, and it came to me that grown-ups didn't all look alike. Now up there is the table lamp, decorated with a golden rose, always in bloom, in memory, I supposed, of the earlier table lamp I cannot ever to this day remember breaking. It was so long ago, yet I do remember how mad they were and how I learned forgiveness was a virtue reserved for Sunday mornings, while real trouble was a sticky stain only time could wear away. Here, under this plant of hers by the window, is the last surviving cereal bowl from when we switched from Wheaties, I think, to Total, which was new back then, between the coming space age and maybe Watergate. Or instead, I could be thinking of All in the Family, when Edith finally comes upon something that didn't freak her out, which was dying. They both liked that show, and sometimes I'd watch it with them on weekends when I was home from college. At the back of this quiet shelf is where she is now, her bronze metal cube with the ashes inside. Still her, here in the old house, where she was so happy after the kitchen remodel. The new goldenrod-colored stove with the small warming oven on top before microwaves. At this point, I could show you her books and the rest, except not the one novel starring that shark, always out there, hunting, ever hungering for the innocent. But maybe to her, it brought back swimming in the bay with her cousins. Once the summer's day work was done, their nights of singing and laughing around the beach fires. Anyway, she had read that demon shark to death so many times that in her hands, its paperback cover wore down to a great white tatter. And that book, well, we put it with her, now in ashes there, among her own. Such a small thing among the many, it seemed, like her. Too much to let go of. But even as I crumbled a little to stop myself from freaking completely out, I knew the sweet primal purity she had found in a story and felt so deeply and for so long, all of it a blessing of agony, and for me, too much to keep. Thank you. And to close, another nature poem, but One with a musical twist, and I wrote it for Avery, my son, who is past 40 now, but finally showing some signs of becoming someone else's. It's called, oh, and he's an avid canoeist. There probably aren't that many places around this part of the state where he hasn't been in a canoe. It's called Nature Guide to the Great Unreal. I wish you a luminous lake, softly rippling in the twilight of this birthday card wilderness, nominally wooded, and a paddle pressed to your hand in this gliding canoe of wooden ribs, your rucksack at the bow with the Bean catalog best ever canvas slipcase for trombone. Embarking now to play out a dream of beauteous waters, a hard chill in autumn air. Your life turning a page to the opening of another wildland trombone season, the calling in of the forest's mighty trombeasts, rutting and huffing, bugling their majestic mating calls, the cliffs ringing with the ungainly struggle to reach high F, slides thrown out hard and all the way, lips buzzing long, wooing notes cradled in grassy strings, while overhead the wheezy wildness of trombirds, popping their timeless migration of feathery snare beats and cymbals, crash, a stunning crash, crash of journey to the California headlands, the meeting of instinct and solo horn, maybe a good backbeat bass, an amped guitar howling to the night like a starving dog across hillsides, no less real than a photographed moment shot in a balanced and forbearing light to achieve the right truth of circumstance, falling upon the strong and the lucky of a predation DNA deep in an ill and heedless wind tuned to the trumpeter swan, its chorus cry a throaty, relentless remembrance of the grander tromboner swan, its mighty blues flapping only in legend now and aglow in campfire stories, the sparks wending into satin darkness toward the stars, which to a wolfish mind may seem highly overrated compared to the sun, in fact, as dodgy as night itself, but still they stare down as earnestly as history, those stars of the ownerless sky where horned owls unfurl to hunt the wild silence of a rising moon, a ripening creation fully in the moment, but just out of reach.
Sound Pages is a Jack Straw production, produced by Carlos Nieto and Daniel Gunther at Jack Straw Cultural Center. Our recording engineers are Daniel Gunther, Ayesha Ubiadelica, and Steve DeTore. Our theme music is by Brian Smith, produced through the Jack Straw Artist Support Program. The 2023 curator of this program is Priscilla Long, and the narrator for this podcast is Carlos Nieto. The Jack Straw Writers Program was inspired by an over-the-back fence conversation in 1996 between author Rebecca Brown and Jack Straw Executive Director Joan Rabinowitz. The program is made possible with support from the City of Seattle Office of Arts and Culture, For Culture, Washington State Arts Commission, the U District Partnership, National Endowment for the Arts, Rainier Institute and Foundation, Arts Fund, and individual contributors. All of the writers heard in this series are published in the Jack Straw Writers Anthology. You can subscribe to this and other Jack Straw podcasts through your favorite podcast app. To hear more episodes and learn about our other programs, visit us at jackstraw.org.